Hey, Be Hope Church, thank you for taking the time to join us today. Before we get to the message, I want to let you know something that I am really excited about. I have a book coming out, and I didn't write this because I wanted to be an author. I wrote this because I believe the content is important. The book is titled Reconstructing the Rubble, and it's about how people lose their faith, the process that is taking place, and how to help them rebuild it when there's nothing left. And so if that's you, or if you have someone that you care about who's in that spot, I wrote this book for you. This book releases nationwide in March of 2021, but we're excited because if you would like to be a part of the launch team, we can get you early access to the book plus some special bonuses. So go to behope.church/book if you'd like to read this work and help us get the word out. Thank you so much and hope you enjoy and benefit from the message today. So this week I was working on content for the message and I'm sitting on the couch, got my iPad out in front of me, my notes all strewn about, and my kids inadvertently gave me the title for the message. They didn't realize that's what they were doing. But as I'm looking at my notes, my four-year-old Parker is sitting next to me playing Super Smash Brothers on the Nintendo Switch. There you go. And as he's going through it, he keeps unlocking new people, and he's exceptionally excited every time he unlocks someone new. And oh, it's the dragon guy. Oh, it's the lizard guy. Oh, it's the boy who looks like me. I don't know what he does. And so he's going through, and he's so excited every time he unlocks someone new. And he does what little kids do when they want to show you something. He could have very easily said, "Hey, Dad, look." And my eyes work that far. I'm not that old yet. I could have easily looked over and be like, "Yep, I see it." Or he could have taken the Nintendo Switch and placed it in my lap on top of the iPad and I would have seen it then. But instead he did something else that is just the most annoying thing in the world, and all of my kids do it, but they want me to see something. And he takes the Switch, and as I'm kind of leaned back, looking at my notes, every single time he goes, "Dad, look! Dad, look at who I unlocked!" And the first couple times I'm like, push it back, push it back, push it back. And then it got to the fourth person. I got really annoyed because I kept telling him to stop doing that. And so I took it out of his hands and I put it right in front of his face. "Can you see? Can you see that?" And then I realized, be a better dad, be a better dad, be a better dad. So I explained to him, I said, I can't see it. I know you know that I see with my eyes and we see with our eyes, but I can't see it when it's right here. And then I told him, I said, "It's too close. It's too close. I gotta push it back in order to see it. When it's that close, I can't actually see it. It's too close." And that's what we're gonna talk about today. The issue you're facing, the problem you might be struggling with, the way in which you feel backed into a corner with no way out, the problem that you have obsessed about, it might be too close. It might be so close that you can't actually see it, and you're worried about it, and you're frustrated with it, and you're keep talking about it over and over again. And this might be the moment in which you need to push it back just a little bit in order to see it as it actually is. Because recorded in this account in the book of Daniel, we are given the gift of perspective. We are given the ability to not obsess about our problems that are right in front of us, but to see them as they really are. So let me give you a little bit of lead in terms of where we find ourselves. Daniel chapter 3, verse 4. It says, "Then a herald, a messenger from the king, shouted out, 'People of all races and nations and languages, listen to the king's command. When you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and other musical instruments, bow to the ground to worship King Nebuchadnezzar's gold statue. Anyone who refuses to obey will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace. So at the sound of the musical instruments, all the people, whatever their race or nation or language, bowed to the ground and worshiped the gold statue that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. King Nebuchadnezzar doesn't feel lofty enough being the king in the greatest empire in the world at the time. He insists that a gold statue of himself be made and that people bow down and worship it. Rumor has it that the gold statue was a little bit taller than Nebuchadnezzar actually was, and his biceps weren't quite to proportion, right quite to size. But we don't know that. I'm just assuming from the biblical text. It says, but some of the astrologers went to the king and informed, 7th century BC, for tattled on the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, long live the king. You issued a decree requiring all the people to bow down and worship the gold statue when they hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and other musical instruments. That decree also states that those who refuse to obey must be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, whom you have put in charge of the province of Babylon. They pay no attention to you, your majesty. They refuse to serve your gods and do not worship the gold statue you have set up. It says, then Nebuchadnezzar flew into a rage and ordered that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought before him. When they were brought in, Nebuchadnezzar said to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you refuse to serve my gods or worship the gold statue I have set up? I will give you one more chance to bow down and worship the statue I have made when you hear the sound of the musical instruments. But if you refuse, you will be thrown immediately into the blazing furnace. And then this statement. And then, what God will be able to rescue you from my power? Nebuchadnezzar, as a way of bringing order to his kingdom and elevation to his position, already considers himself a god and declares that everyone must worship the statue. We have an account that it is known that these three men resisted and people were out to get them. And so he brings them before them and gives them one more chance. And he gives the note, if I could just clear, like, I don't understand. Like, he says, when you hear the sound of the horn and zither and lyre and harp, and like, I don't know why it couldn't just say the musical instruments, like as a generic all-encompassing term. When you hear the musical instruments, I don't know if there's an attendant in the background who's got a kazoo that keeps playing at the wrong time. Nebuchadnezzar's annoying dad's in the background with a cowbell. And he's like, when you hear this sound, more cowbell, more cowbell. It's my interpretation. But then he gets to the end and he says, if you don't, then what God will be able to save you? What God will be able to rescue you? Nebuchadnezzar goes, you're three. All these attendants are mine. All these servants are mine. All these soldiers are mine. I have an army. It's three of you. If you don't do this, what God will be able to save you? And the problem that Nebuchadnezzar has is it's too close. It's too close. It's only what he can see in the moment. And he's so obsessed about what he can see that he looks at these men and he goes, you've got no other way out. I am your only way out. Which is might be where you are right now. And you think that if you don't compromise your convictions that you won't be able to get ahead. You think if you don't lessen your standards, then you won't be accepted. You feel backed into a corner in which you cannot both move forward and live the life that you want to live and maintain the integrity that you believe you are called to maintain. And the tendency in that moment is to take our lives into our own hands and to lower our standards, to negotiate our way out of our convictions, to dismiss morality, and to forsake calling. and to believe that if I'm going to live how I'm meant to live, if I'm going to do what I'm meant to do, then I need to operate in the way of the world. Who cares what Scripture says? I need to fall in line with what society shows us. Who cares about the calling upon my life? When I'm backed into a corner and I have no other way out, of course I have to do this because nothing else will save me. It's too close. It's too close. There's stuff going on that you can't imagine. There's stuff going on that you can't see. And one of my favorite events in all of the pages of Scripture, we find the prophet Elisha, who is known as the man of God. That's a good way to be known. Known as the man of God. The prophet Elisha keeps condemning the king because the king will not worship God, which is a good reason to condemn the king. And so he keeps condemning the king, and this makes the king angry. And he over and over again tries to get Elisha, but God's hand of protection is upon him. And so Elisha always slips out of the king's grip. And then finally, the king gets word that Elisha is in the city of Dothan. And so in 2 Kings chapter 6, we get this account. It says, "So one night the king of Aram sent a great army with many chariots and horses to surround the city." It says, when the servant, Elisha has a servant with him, just the two of them. When the servant of the man of God got up early the next morning, I don't know if he was going to get breakfast. I don't know if he was going to get water. If I'm going to throw my personal opinion in there, I think he was waking up to relieve himself. I think that's what's going on. I think he's busting out of the tent and he's really got to go. When he gets up early the next morning and went outside, there were troops, horses, in chariots everywhere. Could you see the servant's face? They're on the outskirts of the city. He thinks it's waking up and it's nothing but wilderness and it's no one but him and Elisha in the tent. And he like pulls back the curtain of the tent and steps out, stretches, looks up, an entire army before him. Like, how are you gonna respond in that moment? And he comes back into Elisha, and he doesn't, it's important that we read it. Like, he doesn't ask it like this. He doesn't be like, "Oh, sir, what will we do now?" That's not how he says it. "Oh, sir, what will we do now?" The young man cried to Elisha, and Elisha responds, "Don't be afraid. There are more on our side than on theirs." Don't be afraid. I haven't even seen the army to know I'm not scared of the army. There are more on our side than there are on theirs. And then Elisha prayed, "Oh Lord, open his eyes and let him see." The Lord opened the young man's eyes, and when he looked up, he saw that the hillside around Elisha was filled with horses and chariots of fire. You thought he was nervous before. Think of the fear now to go like, "Oh, there is an army surrounding me that I was oblivious to. There was an army that was there ready to fight for me on my behalf that I didn't even know existed." See, the problem with the servant of God is he can only see what he can see. He sees the army, and it's the only thing he's aware of. And Elisha looks at him in that moment and goes, "There is no reason to be afraid." In the same way that I come to you today with the thing that you have worried about, have obsessed about, has consumed your thoughts and conversations, there's no reason to be afraid. Pull it back. Pull it back. It says the servant looked up and saw that the hillside was filled with horses and chariots of fire. Today might be the day in which you need to quit obsessing and look up and see what God is really doing in the moment. Oh, come on, church, do you believe that? Today is the day in which you need to look up. Turn to the person next to you, tell them, look up. Tell them, look up. Unless if they're taking notes, don't bother them and disturb them in that moment. Tell them, look up. Back to the account. They do not submit before King Nebuchadnezzar, even when all the instruments, cowbell included, saxophone included, begin playing. And then it says this, verse 19. Nebuchadnezzar was so furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego that his face became distorted with rage. Everyone right now can picture your parents' face and picture that moment as to what's happening. His face became distorted with rage. He commanded that the furnace be heated 7 times hotter than usual. Then he ordered some of the strongest men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. So they tied them up and threw them into the furnace, fully dressed in their pants, turbans, robes, and other garments. And because the king, in his anger, had demanded such a hot fire in the furnace, the flames killed the soldiers as they threw the three men in. It amazes me. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, securely tied, fell into the roaring flames. But suddenly, Nebuchadnezzar jumped up in amazement and exclaimed to his advisors, "Didn't we?" Guys, it's been a long day. My emotions have been all over the place. I've been up and down. I know I should know this. I know I should have kept track. But I was seeing double, okay? I can't remember exactly. Didn't we throw three men into the fire? "Yes, your majesty, we certainly did," they answered. "Look," Nebuchadnezzar shouted, "I see 4 men. Unbound, walking around in the fire unharmed, and the 4th looks like a god." Oh, we celebrate that today, church. 4 men, unbound, walking around in the fire. Like, it is important to understand, in the moment in which you feel like you have no other way out, the moment in which you feel like you're stuck, that there are armies that surround you that you are oblivious to. Oh, do you believe that today? Armies that surround you that you are oblivious to. A God in the fire with you, helping you, protecting you, restoring you. He goes, "Hang on, there's 4, and no one's heating up, and no one's on fire. They're walking around unbound." And then Nebuchadnezzar, he calls them out of the fire. He goes, come here. And then he makes this declaration, verse 28. It says, "Then Nebuchadnezzar said, 'Praise to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He sent his angel to rescue his servants who trusted in him. They defied the king's command and were willing to die rather than serve or worship any god except their own God.'" Willing to die. Oh, that level of faith. Not just willing to wake up a little bit earlier than normal to go to church on a Sunday. Not just willing to, we have to sing. I don't ever sing. When do I sing? I'll try to rap when the radio's on and I'm in the car by myself. Maybe that's what we need to do. Maybe we just need to take video of all of you in the I don't need to know what rap songs you try to rap to. I know what rap songs you try to rap to. Do we have to, it's so much, serve? What do I get out of it? Nothing. Willing to die rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make this decree. If any people, whatever their race or nation or language, speak a word against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego." And this is where you see Nebuchadnezzar still a little gangster, okay? Like, he's had a change of heart, but he's still a bad dude. He's like, "If anyone speaks a word against their God, they will be torn limb from limb and their houses will be turned into heaps of rubble." Some of you are like that. Could we acknowledge that? Like, you got Jesus in your life, but you still got a little gangster in your past. And you're like, "Oh, we should praise God, but I will tear you limb from limb," if we could be clear on that. Come on. We're a lot more like Nebuchadnezzar than we'd like to admit at times. You're like, "Don't mess." And then Nebuchadnezzar makes this declaration. "There is no other God who can rescue like this." Amen. There is no other God who can rescue like this. The same king who moments ago said, "If you don't do what I want, then what God will save you?" because I've got all the power, then what God will help you? Because I'm the one who controls all the situations right here. When he sees their faith tested through the fire, he declares, there is no other God who can rescue like this. And I want you to know today, when you feel backed into a corner and you feel the pressure to compromise, to lower your standards, to live like everyone else, to be angry like everyone else, when you feel that moment that the king doesn't declare there is no other political party that can rescue like this, because that doesn't save. The king of the greatest empire in the world speaks 7 centuries forward into our lives today that we would know there is no other God who can rescue like this. There is no other God who can heal like this. There is no other God that can take the broken pieces of your life and put them back together for your good, for your future like this. And so we bow to no one else. We serve no one else. We praise no one else, because there is no other God who can rescue like this. Come on, church. Let's give God our praise this morning. Let's declare his goodness in our lives. No other God who can rescue like this. But here's what's amazing to me. As incredible as that is, I do not believe that is the reason why this account is written. As amazing as it is that these 3 men are saved from the fire, I do not believe that has been preserved for us today so that we would know they were saved in the fire. There is a scene earlier in which the faith is far more powerful and far more significant. Nebuchadnezzar speaks his word and goes, when you hear the musical instruments, these instruments, not any other instruments, just these instruments, I will give you one more chance. And this is how they respond. O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God whom we serve is able to save us. He will rescue us from your power, Your Majesty. But even if he doesn't, we want to make it clear to you, Your Majesty, that we will never serve your gods or worship the gold statue you have set up. He can. He has the power to. He's able to. If we could add in, we want him to. Our preferred way to go is not fiery furnace. Old age, that's what we're looking for. He can. He has all the ability. There is no other God who can save. But even if he doesn't, it doesn't change a thing. He can, we want him to, but that doesn't mean he will. And if he doesn't come through in the way we want him to come through, doesn't mean he hasn't come through. If he doesn't answer the way we want him to answer, doesn't mean he hasn't answered, because he can. But even if he doesn't, it doesn't change a thing. He's still God, and you're not. He's still God, and you're not. So even if he doesn't, nothing changes. I believe in our culture today, we suffer from a belief system that we're going to refer to this morning as outcome contingent theology. Outcome contingent theology, which holds this as its central belief. I'm with God as long as God goes in the direction I desire. I'm with God as long as he gives me the outcome I seek. I have faith as long as my life goes in the direction that I had already planned for it to go. We don't put Jesus at the center of our life in this theology. We come to God with our pre-existing agenda, and then we sprinkle a little Jesus on it because it makes us feel better. You understand? I go to church because it makes me feel warm. I go to church because it makes me feel cozy. I go to church because it makes me feel good about myself. And my faith will persist as long as God seems to bless my already decided upon path. And then you're backed into a corner. And then your faith is tested. And you have to choose what God will save, what God will help me live the life that I have already chosen. And instead of the only God who is able to save, we serve the productivity God. Yeah, I have faith, but man, sometimes you just gotta get some stuff done, am I right? Like sometimes like I need to push that off and I gotta take matters into my own hands. You serve the personal security God. It is, well, if I don't make this certain level of income, then I can't feel confident about my future. God holds your future. Yeah, but me too. And so I've gotta do this and make this compromise here to make sure that we're well off enough. People pleasing. The need for affirmation and to be liked by everyone around us to give us our sense of worth. My faith calls me to this conviction and to this standard, but the other people around me don't like that conviction and that standard. And so if I could just smudge it just a little bit, I'll be far more likable to those around us. If you're in middle school, you call this popularity. If you're an adult, you scoff at that notion, but you just re-terminologize the word to networking. Same thing. Could we acknowledge that? Same thing. We just embarrassed as adults to say, we care about popularity. Your network is your power. And the question comes in, what God? What God will you serve? What God? The only God who's able to save? Or I feel pinched, pressed, and pushed into a corner. And so I need to do what I need to do. To be like everyone else, to be accepted by everyone else, even though I know they don't have the power to save, they don't have the power to give life. Because there's another kind of theology, and it's the belief that is expressed by Nebuchadnezzar at the end when he says, there is no other God who has the power to save. It is the belief that is expressed by Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when they say, even if he doesn't, it doesn't change a thing. Because the alternative to the outcome contingent theology is the no other God theology, which doesn't say I'm with God as long as God goes in the direction I desire. It simply says I'm with God. I'm with God. But what if he doesn't? I'm with God. What if he doesn't heal? I'm with God. What if you don't get this promotion because you didn't compromise? I'm with God. There is no other God. And so it's not a question. It's not God, here's my agenda in life plan. Could you come in and bless it? It's God, I am on your plan. I am on your agenda. I seek the life that you call me to, not to bless my already determined path. There is no other God. In C.S. Lewis's parable of the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus, he gives this description that he paints the Christ figure. He paints Jesus in the form of a lion. And there is a scene in which four young people are going to meet this symbol for Jesus that he creates, and they've never met a lion. And as they're coming in, one of them asks this question. They say, is he quite safe? I shall feel rather nervous about meeting a lion. And the response of their guide is this. Safe? Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe, but he's good. He's the king. See, this is what I need you to know. In the presence of the Most High God, your comfort isn't safe. Your false beliefs aren't safe. The ways in which you look to everyone around you for your sense of worth isn't safe. Because there are ways in which we are stuck. There are ways in which we are imprisoned that we're not even aware of. And God will always work for your freedom. God will always work for you to be unencumbered by the idols that we look to and the things that we seek from the wrong sources. And so what God will continuously do is when you go, God, I'll bless you as long as you go in the direction I desire. He will see that faith and go, we're going this way. Decide. We're moving this direction. Choose now. And God doesn't do it to go against you. He does it because he is working for your freedom. He is working that you would know him and that you would love him and that you would know how much you are known by him and how much you are loved by him. So safe. It's not safe, but he's good. But he's good. Let me tell you why I have to preach it like this, and it's so important that we understand it on this level. Let me just make sure. As a church, we are very aware that God loves us, right? Could we acknowledge that? We are, like, every week, have you been listening? Very aware that God loves us, right? That God cares for you, that God wants a relationship with you, right? Very aware. But one-way love is not a relationship. One-way trust is not a relationship. God trusts you. He is giving you free will. Do you trust him? Do you trust him to go, God, order my steps? God, show me the path that you have for me. Lead me into righteousness for your name's sake. Do we trust him in order to do that? There's a scene in Jesus's life in which Jesus gives a hard teaching, a difficult teaching. And it says that a lot of the people who had followed him, who were his disciples, went away because they couldn't accept the teaching. You've been there. God, tell me about the part about how I don't have to worry about tomorrow, how my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And Jesus goes, take up your cross and follow me. No, 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 not that part, not that part. Give me the other part. You make me lie down in green pastures. That's the part I want. It says Jesus gives a hard teaching and many of his disciples walk away. And he looks at the remaining disciples and he says, are you gonna go too? Are you out? And Peter looks at him. And one of the most honest confessions in the world, he just goes, to whom shall we go? Are there other good options? Love that. And then he says this, you have the words of life. You have the words of life. Jesus, I don't like this. Don't get me wrong. I don't like what you just taught. But where else am I going to go? Where else am I going to turn to? Who else am I going to look to for purpose and meaning? And I just say, people say it like this at times. They'll say, hey, I'll put it out there in the universe. Have you heard this? Put it out there in the universe. The universe doesn't love you. The universe doesn't care about you. The universe doesn't have a relationship with you. And so you may say, hey, give me all your good vibes. I don't care about your good vibes. Your good vibes do nothing for me, okay? Put it out there in the universe. Does it make a difference? Because the universe doesn't know me personally. The only one who does is the God of the universe. And so Peter goes, who are we going to go to? There is no other God who can save. There is no other God who can restore, heal, and give hope, put the broken pieces of my life back together. And so that you would look at that today and you go, I may not like it, but where else am I going to turn? God, there is no other God. I'm with you. Come hell or high water, I'm with you. Whether you lead me down the path I want or the path that you have chosen for me, God, you restore. You redeem, you heal, you save. I'm with you. And when you get to that moment, and when your faith reaches that level where it is not a faith of convenience, but it becomes a faith of conviction, is the first time in your life in which you can see the ways in which God seeks to free you. Because God is working for your freedom, but he doesn't free you through magic. He frees you through process. And for so many of us, what has happened is the very situation and event that God is working for our freedom, we have bypassed because it looks like a trial. And God leads you to the moment, and we go, no thanks, I'll take the other route. No thanks, I'll take the lesser path. No thanks, I'll take the easier path in which I can hold on to my comfort. Let me show you something that you may have missed. We're going to read four verses that we read earlier. But there is a piece of this that is so important that you see, because the writer wants us to know one thing oh so clearly. It says, Nebuchadnezzar was so furious that his face became distorted with rage. He commanded that the furnace be heated seven times hotter than usual. Then he ordered some of the strongest men of his army, pay attention, to, I'll keep count up here if you lose it, to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. So they tied them up and threw them into the furnace fully dressed. And because the king had demanded such a hot fire, killed all the soldiers as well. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, securely tied, fell into the roaring flames. Three times. The writer wants us to know they are tied up. Like, you got it the first time, right? You're smart. A lesser congregation would have completely missed it. But you got it, right? First time, yeah, we get it. They're tied up with ropes. Three times, they are tied. They are securely tied. They are still tied when they're thrown into the fire. And that may not seem to matter if you're unaware of the ways in which you're bound, the ways in which you're tied up. Let me give you my list. The ways in which you look to success for approval. The ways in which we look to affirmation for worth, to income for security, to keeping our addiction secret for acceptance. The ways in which we look to popularity or networking for belonging. The ways in which we look to our scale for our self-image. And this idea, if they don't like me, if they don't respect me, or even if they don't envy me, then I don't know what I'm doing. And if that's you, you're bound. You're not free. If your self-worth is dependent upon the opinions of others, you cannot live the life that you're called, because you're always going to be looking to people around you for cues as to whether if they still like you or not. That is not a life of calling. That's a life of compromise. If that is you, you're bound. You're not free. And what will happen is, if you have an outcome contingent theology, the very thing that God is going to use to work for your freedom, you will bypass, because it doesn't go in the direction that you want. And you'll think the idea is that I need to have a perfect life with a perfect family, with perfect kids, with a perfect house. And you don't need a perfect life, because you have a perfect God. You don't need to put everything in order, because God is still on the throne. And the fire that you think will burn you, the trial that you think will test you, the difficult circumstance that you're afraid is going to test you too much, the fire is there to free you. It's there for your freedom. They are bound, they are tied, they are still tied and then thrown in. But suddenly Nebuchadnezzar jumped up in amazement and exclaimed to his advisors, didn't we tie up three men and throw them into the furnace? Yes, your majesty, we certainly did, they replied. Look, Nebuchadnezzar said, I see four men unbound, walking around in the fire unharmed, and the fourth looks like a god. I see four men, no ropes. I see four men, and nothing is holding them back. I see four men, and they're not bound any longer. They're free. See, this is what you're going to think. You're going to think that I have to hold on to affirmation from others in order to feel good about myself, until that affirmation goes away for a second, and then you realize I can handle my life and I'm still stronger than that. You thought you were stuck. You thought you were lost if that person left. And then they left, and you realize that you're strong enough to handle it. You thought your life was going to end if your secret came out. And then your secret came out. Your addiction came to the surface. And the only thing that was actually in danger was your addiction, not you. See, God uses the fire to free you. He uses the test for your freedom. You are not burned. The only thing that is burned in the process are the ropes that are holding you back. And to be able to look at that in the moment and go, God, you will use this fire. You will use this test for my freedom. If your life is heating up, God is doing a greater work. If your life is heating up, God is doing a greater work. And to declare, this fire will not be the story of my destruction. This fire will be the story of my freedom. There is no other God who can save. There is no other God who can deliver. I believe there's someone in here today, and you need to gain the confidence to look back at your problem, to look back at your situation, to look back at your issue, and to be able to go, I'm not stuck. I'm not backed into a corner. I may not be able to see the ways in which God is working, but there are armies on my side. There is a God in the fire with me, and he promises not a hair on my head will be singed. My clothes will not burn. I won't even smell a smoke. I can go through loss without regret. I can have mistakes without guilt. My failure is not final. It is not fatal. God will use this fire and work for it on my behalf, for my good, for my holiness, that I would know the only God who is able to save. Oh, is that you today? Is that you today? God is working in the fire. He is working for my good. Let me show you. Ready? This is my favorite part. Oh, this is my favorite part of the whole thing. You go, you saved it all the way till the end. I saved it till the end. This is my favorite part. We have no evidence, no testimony, nothing that is recorded. We have no reason to believe that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego saw the God who was in the fire with them. No reason to believe that when they were down there in the furnace, they could see the God who was with them. The testimony comes from their enemy that God is with them. You may not know that God is right there beside you, but when an outside world looks at the way in which you handle the fire, they will know God is with them. God is on their side. God is fighting on their behalf. They'll look at your faith and know that God never left you. He never forsook you. He always was with you. He always stands beside you. And so this is what we sang earlier, and this is my favorite part of the song. We sing this: there is no other name but the name that is Jesus. He who was and still is and will be through it all. So come what may in the space between, ready for it? All the things unseen. You don't see everything. You don't see everything. It's too close. It's too close. All the things unseen and this reckoning. And even though you can fully acknowledge that you don't see everything God is doing and all the ways he's working and all the things he's done for your freedom, you can declare this today. And I know I will never be alone. I may not see it all, but I know I will never be alone. Oh, church, with me, make that declaration. I know I will never be alone. I know I will never be alone. Stand to your feet in this moment. Let's proclaim this together. I don't see everything, but I know I will never be alone. Let's sing this out.